Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 209 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Oh, me. Not too much, but a good day to be back on the pod. It's been a good week of baseball. A lot of good action. Caminero was in town. He'll probably be off to Double A soon as he hit 3 home runs this series. Ton of awesomeness. He's just the real deal. He's like everything you thought he'd be, he is. Like, I think he's a top 5 fantasy prospect.
Yeah, he's definitely cemented himself as one of the elite prospects in the game. Remember, you were like saying like a few weeks ago, you were like, I don't think he's going to be here when they come through town. But hey, lucky for you. You get some live looks there. That's great. It's always great when a prospect you don't think is still going to be there is still there. You know, it's like a few weeks out. Like, I had to happen. I forget who it was. I think it was a pitcher. I think, last year, they were coming into town for like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. And I'm like, there's no way. And then they still were. I forget who it was, though, but it's always a good feeling.
Yeah. This week, I'm going to go over to Gwinnett and see some AAA. So Gwinnett's hosting Durham. So you got Manzardo, Mead. Who knows when he's back? I have absolutely no clue. There's like nothing out on him. But right. It'd be nice if Mead was back next weekend and Manzardo's still in town. And they've got some interesting guys there on that team. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, the last tweet I found on Mead is that was May 18th. They said still a few weeks away. So probably won't get Mead, but
probably not.
I saw Mead last year. I haven't seen Manzardo live. So actually, that's not true. I saw Manzardo when he was in Bowling Green. So I did see him for a game. But anyway, it'll be a fun time for sure.
Did we see Mead out in Arizona?
Yeah, he was in the AFL.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, wait, man, I think we saw him in the AFL. I can't remember when. I started to keep track of in the few AFLs now. But yeah, I was like, I thought we saw him at some point. But Yeah, it's always good. Baseball weather is here. Like, it's been outside of a massive rainstorm yesterday. It's been very nice weather here. Like, today here in Maine, it was like mid 70s, like perfect weather. Too bad Portland Sea Dogs are not at home right now. They're coming home this week, but they're on the road this week. But yeah, it's always good to get back on the field. And I missed a couple of live looks because of my car accident a few weeks ago, but hopefully I'll get back into this series this week and get back into the grind there. But we'll be talking mostly prospects, and I see all prospects in this episode, very prospect focused episode, maybe a little Junior Caminero at some point. Yes, there will be spoiler alert. Before we get into the episode, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris at RotoClegg. I'm at AirCross04, shows at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, Chris's Substack and my Patreon, for more work from each of us, including our prospect and dynasty rankings. And before we get into the show, we want to say a quick word about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If you sign up using promo code Toolshed, you'll receive a 100% deposit match up to $100, and that can be used for any of their fun fantasy games. Sign up using that code Toolshed at play.underdogfantasy.com/P-the-toolshed. All right, as I said, more of a prospect-focused show today. We'll start off with, there's been a good amount of prospect call-ups over the last week or so. On my top 25 prospects to stash article on RotoBaller that I do every Tuesday, I had to take off like seven guys out of the top 25 this week. A few hitters and a few pitchers, so a good little mix here. We'll start with Matt McClain, who I think we both, Chris, had – I don't know if we were fading him. I don't know if that's the correct term, but he was sliding on both of our rankings last year heading into the offseason. But, man, he really turned things around this year and was one of the – you know, the best all-around offensive players in the minor leagues for the first month and a half of the season or so. In 38 games for AAA Louisville, slashed .348, .474, .710 with 12 doubles, 12 home runs, and 10 steals. And even, you know, equally as important, he trimmed the K rate a good amount, was still walking a ton. So, you know, did basically everything you wanted to see him do that he kind of wasn't doing last year. I struck out a bit too much last year. Same thing in the fall league where he had 31 Ks and just 97 plate appearances. So huge turnaround. Looks like he's going to have a good chance to stick moving forward as, you know, four hits his first four games, 389 OBP in his first four games. So definitely impressive. And I've always been a pretty big McClain guy. I did, again, let him fall down my rankings, but I think that power speed, well, he's not going to be, you know, Ellie levels, but I think this is a guy that could flirt with, you know, 20 plus in that ballpark with a pretty decent average in OBP. So I'm definitely on board. I think he's a strong buy right now.
Yeah, I do too. He's smaller, but he plays with a chip on his shoulder, and he certainly plays much larger than, you know, his actual height weight. But yeah, he did gain power this year. He's kind of backed by all the metrics. You saw him have a 104.5 mile an hour 90th percentile exit velocity in AAA, which is very good. That's MLB average is like 103, so well above average there. He was consistent, like very good tight launch angles, like very consistent standard deviation launch angle. His average exit velo was 91 miles an hour. Everything kind of backs what he did, and with decent plate skills too. So he doesn't chase that often. He makes good contact on pitches in the zone. You mentioned the speed and everything else that he's got going on, plus the home ballpark. I think he's going to step right in and be in a great place to hit. And yeah, you know, I'm not sure how many bumps we see along the way. So far, he's hitting .211, but he's got a .318 OBP. I do think we see him come around. I'm expecting a good performance moving forward for him. And honestly, like, I think that he is a good buy in Dynasty League. Despite the last couple games, he's has five strikeouts over the last two games. But, you know, we're talking such a small sample here. Like, I'm looking at the larger body of work for Matt McClain. And like you said, I think he's going to stick and be a regular guy for them. Because what other incentive do they have to actually bring him up at this point?
Right. And there's no other – I mean, they have so many kind of open spots on this team. And with India getting hurt – today and maybe going on the IL, that opens up even more playing time, and maybe we see Ellie soon. I don't know. He's done a great job of trimming down the K rate this year and walking more. That's been a huge thing for him, especially over the last few weeks. But yeah, it looks like McClain is, he started every game. It's all but one. He did sit on Let's see. He said on Wednesday versus a lefty, but he's starting at shortstop and hitting second every other game that he's been up. So, yeah, I think it's only a matter of time before we see Ellie and probably Encarnacion Strand up with him and, you know, maybe add a little firepower to that Cincinnati offense, which hasn't been doing a whole heck of a lot this year. But a couple more bats caught up as well. Mark Vientos for the Mets, and most recently Bo Naylor today on Sunday for the Cleveland Guardians here. You know, Vientos, Chris, has been raking. He was absolutely raking in the minor leagues, and obviously this wasn't a spot for him because he limited defensively to, you know, a corner infield type of guy. Probably should be a DH long term, but this year almost equally split between first and third base. And obviously, you know, they just brought up Brett Beatty to play third a few weeks, a month or so ago, whatever it was. They have some dude named Pete Alonso at first. So kind of no spot for him, but finally get the call a couple of days ago. Already has a home run, had four hard hit balls in his first game a few days ago. And again, this is a guy that was hitting 333, 416, 688 with 13 home runs in 166 plate appearances for AAA Syracuse this year. You know, walks a decent amount, keeps the K rate in check. He's always been a pretty solid bat. You know, 2022, hit 280, 24 home runs, 101 games. 2021, hit 281, 25 home runs, 83 games. So always been a pretty solid bat. But where do you think he fits in, like, long-term, Chris? Do you think this is a guy that you'd be, you know, willing to invest in right now in dynasty leagues?
I think he fits in another organization. I think he's going to be traded. He's playing every other day right now. He has not played consistently. He basically an every other day type ordeal. And that's obviously not ideal for your prospect, one of your top prospects, to come up and be thrown in that spot. I think that he probably, I think they view Brett Beatty as their everyday third baseman, though they have talked about putting him in a corner outfield spot. So that kind of, I know there's DH spots. I know there's room for Vientos, but I feel like they're going to dangle him for pitching. And honestly, they need it. They have so many injured arms, like they're, rotation's older, it's stayed hurt. The dude's absolutely smoking the ball. He smoked the ball in the minors, as you mentioned. He maxed out at 113 miles an hour. I mentioned the 90th percentile Matt McClain. His is 109.5 miles an hour, which is like pretty close to Aaron Judge levels. That's pretty elite there. So you love to see that. A 94.5 mile an hour average exit velocity. Like, he just does nothing but hit the ball very, very hard. I think he needs a place where he can play every day and thrive. Don't know where that is, but I'm not sure it's in New York with the Mets. I think this is a trade situation, and I think they're probably showcasing him to see what teams want to see what he can do against major league talent. And they're showcasing him to see what they've got for a trade happens. Just kind of my thoughts there.
Yeah, I do think that's probably the case. I was gonna just trying to think of like where'd be a good spot. My brain immediately went to Cleveland, but they don't need a corner infield DH type. They already got Joe Ram Naylor and Josh Bell. He was an outfielder that would definitely help. Their outfield is kind of, you know, outside of Stephen Kwan, has been shaky this year. But Cleveland's about to have a log jam at the rotation with McKenzie and Savali coming back in the near future. Where do they get put? You know, they've had Logan Allen come up, Tanner Bibee, so it's going to be a log jam there. Maybe Miami. I don't know. I could see maybe Miami. They have plenty of arms. They could do trade like Vientos for Braxton Garrett. I don't know. But, yeah, I do think it's going to be similar results. Like, they still could try to fit in Ronnie Mauricio, and that's probably at second base. And that's another thing, too. Mauricio moving to second base more so recently, probably bring him up to go there, move McNeil to left field. It's just – there's just no room for Vientos. Let's say I want to put him at DH and, you know, not play Vogelbach, though I know everyone loves Vogelbach. So I don't know. I think he is a good buy. I think he will find a spot somewhere. I just don't know where.
Yeah.
The other bat, Bo Naylor, at this current point in time, I'm not 100% sure if it was just for today or it'll be up, you know, for good. Probably should be up for good. Like, what was it like? It took Cleveland catchers until like 3 days ago to get their first hit in the month of May. The duo of Cam Gallagher and Mike Zunino have just been absolutely atrocious at the plate. So probably should have Naylor up for good, but hard to say right now. But Naylor, you know, he wasn't tearing it up in the minor leagues, but, you know, this is his usual hitting for good power, 9 home runs in 41 games, you know, still walking a ton, 391 OBP, walk rate, you know, well over 10%. So kind of doing the same thing he's always done. But the one thing he's completely stopped running this year. I have no idea if that's by design. I don't recall there being an injury that might be limiting him on the base pass, but it's a guy that had 10 steals in 2021 in 87 games, 20 last year in 118 games, only attempted two steals this year, and he's been caught on both of them. So not quite sure what's going on in the stolen base department there with Bo Naylor, but this is a guy that, Chris, like, how high do you think Naylor could rise in? You know, once he gets settled in, like, where do you see him fitting in terms of, like, the catcher ranks here? Like, obviously more higher in OBP than average leagues, but where do you think he settles in down the road?
That's a good question, because I'm guessing he is up as a 27th man for a doubleheader today. So that's obviously first and foremost important that he's probably not going to stick. He's probably going back down to AAA, which is dumb, but it is what it is. I'm not really sure what they're thinking there. Like, if they want to win, like, their catcher spot just ain't doing it. It's time for them to promote Bo Naylor for good. He's an interesting blend of OBP, power. Like you said, the speed has been interesting. He's just not running. He's not attempting to run. And like he did last year, he stole 20 bases last year, which was pretty substantial. And we haven't seen that this year. He's only had two attempts total. So he hasn't been successful in either of them. But you mentioned the power's good. The metrics kind of back that and support that as well. So I could see him coming up and struggling initially and him kind of fading down list. And if that's the case, I think there's probably an opportune time to buy him in the future, because I do like the profile long term, especially in an OBP type league. He plays up there, and obviously he's decent and average, but there's power. There's a little bit of speed. Like, you know, maybe he's not going to be a JT Realmuto type, but who knows? Maybe he could be a 20 plus home run bat that steals 5 to 10 bases, and that'll play at the catcher position. I'm not sure the impact is instant. And I think people are just going to get tired of kind of sitting around and be like, what is Cleveland doing here? And in doing that, I think it's going to create a decent buy-in opportunity for him in a dynasty league.
Now, I don't know about you, Chris, but I love it when my two catchers are slashing 165, 276, 318, and 106, 160, 128. I mean, I don't know what more you could ask for offensively out of your catchers there. I mean, Yazdino has two home runs, but also a 47% strikeout rate. It's, man, that's bad. They're combined for a negative 0.3 war. Somehow Zunino's over because of his defense, but well, both their defense is keeping them from being lower on the war than they actually are. But yeah, I do agree. I would love to see him start running again. Again, I'm just kind of confused as to why he stopped running this year, but everything else is still there. He's got above average, you know, or better power. You know, obviously, he walks a ton. So I think in OBP leagues, maybe he could flirt with, you know, C1 status, you know, as a starting catcher. Average leagues, maybe he's more of a high-end C2. Hard to say, but if he keeps running, and if he is like a 20 home run, 5-10 steal guy, that'll be a, you know, back end top 10 catcher for sure. So I definitely do like Bo Naylor. I think he's a bit underrated, but yeah, definitely a good buy in dynasty leagues. But yeah, probably, you know, I don't know what the impact is this year either. All right, over to a trio of pitchers here. Obviously, we had Yuri Perez last week. This week, we had Matthew Liberatore recalled, but he was used out of the bullpen today for some freaking reason. And then on Monday and Tuesday, back-to-back, we have Bobby Miller and Gavin Stone. Let's start with those two, Chris. You know, I think in many rankings, I think including our own, I know in mine at least, I've had, like, these two have kind of gone back and forth. Like, one update, I'll have Miller ahead. The next update, I'll have Stone ahead, vice versa. Back and forth, back and forth. Which one are you higher on for both this year and long? Let's just assume they're both up. Let's just hypothetically, they're both up for the rest of the season. Who would you pick for this year and long term?
I'd rather have Miller just because of the stuff. I'm not sold on Gavin Stone as a change-up first guy, and we've kind of seen that. The effects of that at higher levels than getting hit around the majors, his fastball just isn't good enough to blow by professional hitters. And he's almost a two-pitch guy with leading with the changeup. And that's kind of a bit discouraging for me. I'd love to see a slider kind of evolve some, and he throws it a little bit, but I want to see the slider be used more. I want to see the changeup be used less. And this changeup is good. Like, I really like the changeup. But you can't lead with a changeup when your fastball is just average. And I think that's kind of where he is. He has an average fastball. He's got a great changeup. But MLB hitters aren't going to be fooled by that.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win?
Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And I wrote that. Like, I wrote that up last week. He had a great start in AAA, and I wrote in my Dynasty Digest, my daily article, to sell him high, like try to sell him off of that start for several reasons. One is because of the changeup and leading the way, and two, the fastball just not quite there. So, you know, he could evolve. He's got great command. He definitely has the command edge over Bobby Miller, but Miller's stuff is just so electric and so good that I would prefer Miller there and think that his fastball sets up his stuff much better than Stone's does. Even though Miller doesn't have the command, I will still take Bobby Miller in both rest of season and Dynasty.
Yep, I definitely agree. And I moved Miller back ahead in my May update for my prospect rankings. So, yeah, the stuff is really good with Miller. I think he's got the better fastball. He's got a really good slider, too. I guess if you pinned his slider against Stone's changeup, maybe I'd still lean Stone changeup over Miller's slider. But I think it's fairly close, and I think the rest of the arsenal is definitely goes to Bobby Miller. And even if I do agree that Stone probably has a bit better command and control than Miller does, but I think there's a bigger gap between the stuff overall. And you know, after a couple rough few starts to open the year for Miller, he is his best outing the other day, six innings, just one unrun, six Ks. So I think he's obviously on coming off his best start of the season. And yeah, I would take Miller. I think Miller's a good buy low still too. I think
maybe a little bit
of prospect fatigue sitting in with Miller, as it has with a lot of these slightly older, like the Dodgers prospects like him and Michael Busch. So I think there's still a good buy window for Miller, and I would have maybe tried to sell. Just if Stern has a good start this week, it's a tough week, though. I don't know if I'd start either of them this week because they got Atlanta and then the Tampa Bay Rays, who are the best offense in baseball right this year. So not a ideal week to start either of these guys. So maybe if you have better options, I might bench them for now, but I think long-term, I think they'll both be pretty good. I would lean Miller over Stone as well. And Liberatore, where does Liberatore fit into this? If you added him into the mix here, is he behind both Stone and Miller for you? I think I'd rank them Miller, Stone, Liberatore. I like the improvements Liberatore's made. Obviously, the fastball has taken a huge step forward. That was a major issue for him in the past, especially last year. Look at the metrics on that pitch last year. That's much better fastball this year. I think he's a step behind. I think he's a tier down from those two guys long term, moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I can see Stone and Liberatore in the same tier. The Cardinals management just seems completely incompetent right now. He's been so good all year in AAA. He came up and pitched well in his major league start, and then they use him out of the bullpen. Like, what are they doing?
What's going on with St. Louis? That's usually a team that's just run so well. At least maybe Cardinals fans will disagree with me, but just like from afar, I feel like that's one of like the teams you think, like, all right, that's a team that has their shit together, but not this year.
No, Ollie Marmol is, dude, they shouldn't allow him to interview. I mean, like, the things he says in interviews, it's like he just tears the team down. Like, it's so weird. But aside the point, Liberatore did pitch today on Sunday, an inning, and he pitched the eighth inning. Allow two earned runs. Like, dude, he's not a bullpen guy. Like, he's a starting pitcher. And, like, putting him in that spot is not ideal by any means. So, like, I like Liberatore. I think his arsenal's significantly improved. I just not sure what they're even thinking using him out of the bullpen when this rotation needs help right now. It makes no sense to me. But, obviously, we've got to play to what the Cardinals are doing. And that's not starting Matthew Liberatore next start, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know what they're... Is it first they're like, oh, he's going to the bullpen. Then I heard another thing, like, oh, he's actually going to start on Tuesday or whatever it was, and they use him on the bullpen anyway today. I just don't get it. Yeah, it's not like he's like a DL Hall type, or like, oh, that guy could flourish the pen. Like, I'm sure Liberatore could be fine. He's a good pitcher in general. I'm sure he'd be fine, but yeah, he definitely has the starter build. I think he'll be a good maybe back-end three, high-end four, in that range And yeah, this St. Louis rotation is, you know, on the older side. You know, we've had some, obviously Wainwright's almost 42 now. You know, Flaherty's had a bunch of injuries. So I figured maybe they go with a six man. You know, neither Matt nor Miles Mikolas have been that good this year. I think they both have ERAs of a five right now. But yeah, I don't know what their plan is, because like, it still shows him as, at least in roster resources, starting on Wednesday in Cincinnati. I mean, maybe that still happened. I don't know. It's so weird. Like, I guess he's a hold right now just to see what happens here. But yeah, I don't know what St. Louis is thinking. It's a very weird situation for sure. Having a hard time managing your finances? Well, Rocket Money is here to help. With all the subscriptions we have to manage these days, including all of those streaming services, it can be difficult to keep track of everything. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills all in one place. Stop throwing your money away. Cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/toolshed. That's rocketmoney.com/toolshed, rocketmoney.com/toolshed. All right, Chris, we both recently put out prospect ranking updates over on, you know, my Patreon and your Substack. And the top 10 has had a little bit of a shake, a couple of new names in the top 10 battle up at the top. It's a fun top 10 right now. So I figured we'd spend at least a little bit of time here kind of diving into it and what each of our new top 10s look like. So how would you take it away?
Yeah, I'm still kind of tweaking mine. It's an interesting update to kind of figure out where everybody fits right now. Because at this point, we have like sizable data enough to like feel okay about some guys, but also like we have some graduates that have changed the perspective a bit too. And so obviously guys naturally move up when that's the case. I haven't looked in a couple of days. Did Brett Beatty graduate?
He did. Yeah, he did. Yes. Yeah, I think, yeah, a couple of days ago. Yeah.
Okay. So I had Beatty in my last top 10. So he's obviously going to bump out. Volpe graduated too, right?
He did. Yep. Both.
So
both
I've got two guys to clear out here. Do you want to go ahead and give yours and then I can clear these guys out and then I'll give you mine.
Yeah. Let's do that. And mine have already, you know, people are going to be like, oh, he tweeted something different the other day. There's a lot of guys that are very close to my rankings that have already, you know, jumbled up over the last few days, but here are my top 10 as of now. So recently I had Walker at one and then Ellie and Holiday. I've already flipped that. I think it's still a top tier. I think it's still kind of close, but Ellie is my one right now with the, obviously he has the highest upside by, I think, a considerable margin. You know, if every prospect were to hypothetically hit their ceiling, he's like head and shoulders above the rest. Like, this is Tatis Acuna levels upside. So Ellie's my one. Now I have Jackson Holiday at two, who is just, man, like, the kid's 19 and high A and looking like he is too good for that level already. So hopefully I can get him to see him. I guess he wouldn't when Bowie comes to town. I think they come to town in July, if I recall correctly. So maybe he'll be up to a minor cut of woods by July, but he's my two. Obviously he's hitting for power. He's stealing bags. He's hitting, you know, for super high average every day. It's like another multi-hit game for Jackson Holiday, walking more than he's striking out, everything you could want and more from someone his age. So he's got to be in the two spot now. Walker is now down to three. I got James Wood four. And it's slow start to the season, but he's picked it up the last few weeks. And, you know, K rate's still a little high. That's the concern with a guy that big, but hitting for power, stealing bags, walking a good amount, hitting, you know, for solid average. So he's in the four. I still have Jordan Lawler in the five, and that's probably unpopular. He was up to three at one point. And yeah, the K rate is really high. The last few weeks have been very, very bad for Jordan Lawler, but I'm still a believer, and he's still 20 years old at AA, still figuring out the level. So for now, he's going to stay, but if this extends another, you know, 3-4 weeks, then I think he's going to really start falling out of my, you know, top 10. Then I got a couple of Tampa Bay guys back-to-back, Kyle Manzardo in the six, Junior Caminero, who we obviously mentioned earlier, in the seven, and then the rest of my top 10 is rounded up by a trio of outfielders, Evan Carter in the eight slot, Jackson Churio at nine, and my boy Colton Cowser at 10. What you got, Chris?
All right. So after the moves and the removal of several guys from graduation, I have same top three as you. I have Elliott one. I think this upside is just too tremendous with the plate discipline improvements. It's so hard to. And Holiday's been awesome, but Ellie's got the proximity. He's got just everything you want to see. And like, if he hits 100% like of his 100% outcome for him is Fernando Tatis Jr., maybe even better, which is insane. Those tools are unreal. Like how hard he hits the ball, his speed, and the contact's improved too. Now, Holiday's been. So go ahead.
I'm sorry. You see that ball he hit today?
Yeah.
Ellie, it was, he's murdered. Like, I was like that ball had a family and he just didn't care.
Yeah. He's absolutely insane with what he's doing. So he's still in the one spot. And as good as Jackson Holiday's been, like, you argue one, you can argue two. Like, I'm good either way. It's both are really good. But I just think with Ellie's proximity, hard to just ignore that, in my opinion, with the tools, with the proximity. Like, he's got it. And so for me, it's like hard to not have Ellie in the one spot, followed by Holiday, who's been tremendous. Nothing against Jackson Holiday here at all. He's been way better than anybody could have even thought that he would be. So that 1-2 is really, really good. I've got Jordan Walker in the three spot still. You know, Walker's gone down. He struggled. But at the end of the day, how much of it is just a loss of confidence where it's like, okay, like you were playing fine and you got demoted. Like, you know, that's a tough spot to be in. And I think that's kind of been the case for Jordan Walker. He's gone down and he's like, well, this sucks. Like, I don't want to be in AAA. Like, I was performing in the majors. Like, why ultimately am I here? And because of that, like, here we are. And he's just, you know, obviously not in a good place mentally, probably, with these struggles. And hopefully he gets back on track. The talent is certainly there. And I do think we probably see him bounce back pretty strong. So Walker 3. I've got Jackson Churio at 4. I just think Churio, man, he does things that most people can't do. I was watching a game the other day, and he gets thrown like a 98-mile-an-hour fastball in on his hands. He gets it opposite field out of the park. Like, it looked like it should have been like a flare to like behind the first baseman. And it literally traveled out. Like, what he's doing is just insane right now. And I really do believe that Churio is every bit legit. So after him, I have Junior Caminero. I mentioned, you know, I saw him 3 times this week live, and that's enough to feel pretty good about him after all the film I'd watched. And he's basically everything that you want in a prospect. He's legit as they come. He's been so good this year. And so I just can't ignore this anymore. And I think Caminero is a top 5 prospect. I've got Kyle Manzardo in the 6th spot. He's taken his contact skills and he's added power. Like, this dude was a 70 hitter and now he's added the power to it. Just insane. His EVs, like shattering his EVs from last year. So I have a hard time arguing against him in this spot too. Like, for me, easy top 10 guy. That's Kyle Manzardo in the 6th spot. I have James Wood in the 7th spot. I like Wood. You mentioned he had a slow start, but he's really picked it up, and we've really seen, you know, a big progression from him over the last month. Wood's got great control of the zone, the power for his size. I mean, obviously he's got the power, but the speed for his size is really impressive to me. So James Wood in the 7th spot. I have Colton Cowser in the 8th spot.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. How dare you go higher than me on Colton Cowser?
He's been so...
I love it, though.
So good all year. I think he has to be up soon, too. Like, you know, obviously injury right now, but it's just nothing serious. He may even have been back. I haven't seen if he's played the last... I know he was out the other day. I was like, oh, he's getting called up or whatever, but it ended up being some kind of small injury. I'm going to have to look and see if he's played this week or not, just to confirm, because obviously it's been a busy week for me in general and then out at the ballpark a lot. He has not played since the 16th, but you know, I think it was a minor injury that we saw with him. So, you know, what he's shown with the power, with the speed, hitting for average, making good contact, like improved contact from last year is really the biggest thing for me. And then I've got Evan Carter at 9, who Carter's just a dude. He continues to perform. He continues to add power, which I'm not surprised at. Like, the frame last year, like, screamed that he could add 20 pounds and still be a freak athlete. Like, I think he's that good of an athlete. So now we've seen it. He's added to it. And here we are. And in the 10th spot, I have Eury Pérez, who he's my top pitching prospect at this point. Grayson graduated. He's a top tier, but Yuri's up in the majors, and Yuri's pitching really well in the majors at 20 years old. I don't like going this high on pitching prospects, but honestly, it becomes really messy after that for me, where I'm like, ugh, like poor performance, hurt, it's just like, I don't know. And, you know, Yuri's been that guy all year. He's been steady. He's just shoved in double A, and it was like tacky ball, whatever. He's coming to the majors and shoved too. So I can't really argue against Yuri in the top 10 at this point, especially considering he's pitching in the major leagues. So yeah, that's my top 10. Ellie De La Cruz, Jackson Holliday, Jordan Walker, Jackson Churio, Junior Caminero, Kyle Manzardo, James Wood, Colton Cowser, Evan Carter, and Yuri Perez.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against Yuri that high. And I'm with you. I don't usually like going that high on pitching prospects, and it's very rare I have one in my top 10. I think Grayson stuck in there here and there over the last year or two, but usually my top pitching prospect usually is like in like the 15 to 20 range. It's just because we've seen, you know, the hit rate not be so high with these guys. Obviously, so many injuries we've had over the last few. Let's look at the top five from this year. We had obviously G-Rod hit injured last year. This year, Espino hurt again, Painter, and then Tiedemann most recently. So it's just more of a crapshoot, so to speak. But yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Like after my top 10, I felt really good about. And then there was a drop. Like there's still some guys in that next tier. Like, you know, I have Encarnacion Strand, Westberg. I still got Mead in there, even though he struggled. I think he's in that tier. Yeah. I threw Matt McLean up there. You know, Brett Beatty was in that tier. Jason Dominguez, even though he's kind of been struggling at the plate this year, hitting under 200. Drew Jones hasn't really shown much yet. So that's kind of the tier. You know, Pete Crow Armstrong has been, you know, good, but not great. So yeah, I definitely feel good about that top 10. Then there is, I think there's a definitive 10 for me. Where did you have Lawler out of curiosity? I know he's a hard one to rank right now. It's obviously the upside is there, but he has not looked good the last month or so. Where did he fall to?
Yeah, I've got him at 11.
Okay.
I debated back and forth between him, Westberg, and Yuri going in. It's like, yeah, I think Westberg's there for me. Like, I really do think that.
Yep. So, I have Westberg at 15. So
yeah, he's been that good. And so, you know, he's only improved everything that he's done from last year. And he was really good last year too. And everybody was all on board the Norby train. And I stuck by the Westberg guns, and he's been that guy. So it's been kind of fun to watch him. But Lawler's tough. I really do think Lawler's tough to evaluate because he shows the power, he shows the speed, but he's also had his share of struggles too. And
it is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You know, I'm just not sure at the end of the day, like, where does he fit in? I think the talent's easily top five. Like, there's no doubt about that. But there were power concerns last year, like really poor EVs. His contact rates are not good right now. I mean, he's running contact rates below 70%, which isn't ideal. He's striking out over 30% of the time. You don't want to see that either. And he just doesn't hit the ball all that hard. So, yeah, I don't want to, like, put a panic button on him or anything, but he's fine. I'm just not sure I'm like there with him in the top 10. It's close though.
Yeah, he needs to, as I mentioned, he needs to start turning it around sooner. I think he's already fallen two spots, but at least in my rankings, but that fall will be, you know, even bigger because there's a lot of good names right behind him. I probably should have bumped him down a few more spots. Again, it's a big cluster for me, but yeah, he definitely has to turn things around pretty soon. Again, I would love to see. Yeah, I got Westberg 15. I got Nolan Marte 14. I think Marte is a good buy right now too. People seem to be down on him for whatever reason. I don't know what it is. Like, yeah, he started off a little slow last year, but I think people don't realize like how good he was for the last like half of last year, where he was hitting for power, still running. Like, he seemed to figure out. Like, you and I mentioned this time and time again. He had to figure out how to succeed with the new frame, the bigger frame, and he started to last year, and then this year. Yeah, again, a little bit of a slow start, but he's been, you know, one of the better hitters in the minor leagues over the last, you know, 3 weeks or so. It's like overall, he's hitting for average. He's hitting for power. He's still stealing bags, even with the bigger frame, which was very encouraging to see. It's always like, all right, they get bigger. Do they not run as much? He's still running just as much as he ever has. And you know, he's improving the K rates, walking a good amount too. So yeah, definitely very encouraging. I think Marte could be. So we got a couple guys that are going to graduate soon. You figure, you know, by the All-Star break, you know, Walker will, I'm assuming, will be back up and have graduated by that point in time. Maybe Caminero. Maybe we get Manzardo soon. Maybe we get Couser soon. So we could have a few openings in this top 10 over the next few months. Maybe he's a guy that could get up top 10. Hopefully Westbrook's up soon too, because I have several dynasty leagues that I need Westbrook up right now. He's just chilling there in my minor leagues. Would really appreciate it. And Couser too. I think I have more shares of Westbrook than Couser in my dynasty league. So really looking forward to getting those two guys up to give me some more depth. Like I have Westbrook and Highlander. I know that I'm just waiting for him to get that eligibility up in the major leagues. But yeah, it's definitely, we knew there's going to be some shakeups in the top 10 with all the, you know, guys that were going to graduate early at the season, you know, like with Volpe and Corbin Carroll and Gunnar and all of them. But yeah, very exciting top 10 right now for sure. And I think this is a pretty definitive, like top 10, 11, 12 or so. All right, let's move over to some recent prospect standouts. We got 8 names on the list here, 5 hitters and 3 pitchers that have really been standing out. And these will all be stats over the last 10 days, starting with Aurelvis Martinez, who's having a very weird season. He had, you know, entering, let's see, let me pull that back up. He's been on, obviously on a home run binge over the last week and a half or so. He's up to 11 home runs on the season, and he has 17 hits total. 11 home runs, 1 double, 1 triple, 5 singles. No, excuse me, 4 singles, excuse me. This might be a guy that has more home runs than singles this year. That'd be, I wonder if that's ever been done before. You think that's ever been done, Chris? More home runs than singles in the season?
I have no idea, but I'm guessing probably not. That seems pretty rare.
I mean, if anybody, it would have been like Joey Gallo or like Chris Davis, Baltimore Chris Davis. There's only 2 guys I could think of that might have had. I'd have to go look. That's a fun stat. I don't know how you could figure that out if it's ever been done before, but that's a really fun stat. But he's on a major home run binge, but he's still only hitting 149 with a 208 OBP. You know, the power's there. Like, I've seen Aurelvis, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 times live at this point. I forget, but so I've seen him a good amount, and the power's there. Like, I've never once questioned the power. Like, this, if this guy was full season in major leagues, he'd hit 30 home runs, but he'd also probably hit 150. This is a 30 grade hit tool that might even be a little generous. Like, it doesn't necessarily swing and miss too much. Like, the K rate is not bad right now. It's a little over 25%. So that's not bad at all. It doesn't walk a whole ton. Walk rate's kind of, has been turning down every year of his professional career, and he just doesn't make contact. Like, the contact skills are absolutely terrible. He's pull happy. It's just a very easy, you know, profile to defend against. So I have nothing. I don't think he's even in my top 300. Let me look, where is he in my rankings? Aurelvis is, his career point in time, 328 in my rankings, and that's just because of the power. Like, he's sliding down. He was 241 last update, now 328. He's probably gonna keep sliding down even further. I don't care how many home runs he hits. He's hitting 145 on the year. Like, this is not a major league hitter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so either. And that's been said more and more. And that wasn't the case last year. But I think I heard on the Baseball America pod, they were actually talking about that. And I think it was Jeff Bonson. I think it was J.J. Cooper on the Hot Sheet pod. And J.J. said that he, not sure if he's in a major league hitter. And I've kind of been in that camp where it's like, okay, the contact skills just aren't there. His glove is not good. So, you know, that obviously is a ding to him too. Like, if you can't make contact, you at least got to have a decent glove, and he doesn't have that. The power's legit. He's aggressive. It's just, I don't know. It's not a fantasy profile in my opinion, because it's just empty power with nothing else. And I'm not even sure, like you said, that he makes the big leagues. He may get a taste in the big leagues, and I get it. You can tell me he's young for the level. I got it. But still, there's not much in this profile to like other than power. So for me, if you can sell high based on this massive, massive power run, I do so.
Yeah, and obviously there's no spot for him in Toronto. Even if they're
even if he could make it up there, like there's no spot for him. Like obviously they got Bobichet, Matt Chapman on the left side. I don't see him really fitting anywhere else on the diamonds. Yeah, this is just not a good profile. He's now been at Double A for 149 games. Was there all of last year? Hit 203. And yes, like he's young for the level. I get that. He was 20 last year. He's 21 this year. You can still call that young for the level. And then everybody just wants to give him a pass. And I tweeted something like this like a week or so ago that, yeah, you can look at age to level, but don't just don't completely dismiss guys that are old for the level. Guys like Grant McRae, Cade Marlowe, James Outman, perfect example. Guys like that are like 24, 25. You can't just completely dismiss those guys. And then on the other side, like with Aurelvis and other guys that are maybe young for the level but struggling, you can't just be like, oh, they're going to be fine. They're young for the level. They'll figure it out. Yeah, they might. And he's not like he's 25 and struggling in Double A. I'll give him that. But that's why you can look at each prospect on a case-by-case basis and look at the profile. And this profile is extremely flawed outside of the power. So, yeah, I've been out on him for over a year now, and I literally have no desire to roster him in any. You could offer me for free. I'd be like, nah, I'll go get somebody else off the waiver wire. I have no desire for Aurelvis. But a trio of Rockies that are pretty intriguing that are all hitting well over the last 10 days. Yankee Fernandez, Jordan Beck, and Adele Amador. Fernandez is in high A. Actually, they all in high A? Oh, yeah, they're all in high A. Where is high A for Colorado?
Spokane.
Yeah, that's right. Is this Spokane or Spokane?
Spokane.
I've always called it Spokane. I don't know. Why is the E on the end? English language doesn't make any sense sometimes. But anyways, no English question here. But yeah, these all three have been absolutely on fire for most of the season, especially over the last 10 days. Fernandez slashing 457, 440. Yes, that is a higher average than OBP. And a slug of 1,022. He has four doubles, two triples, six home runs over the last 10 days, which is 50 plate appearances. And then Jordan Beck slashing 385, 520, 795 with 11 walks and 10 Ks over the last 10 days, 50 plate appearances as well, four doubles and four home runs. Adele Amador, who just had a three home run game the other day over the last 10 days, 275, 370, 750 with a double, six home runs, and as many walks as strikeouts. With Amador, we'll start with him, Chris. You know, he's a guy that he's always shown a very, very advanced approach for his age. And he's still 19. If not, he just turned 20. Let me pull him up. He turned 20 back in April. Yes, he just turned 20. This is a guy that had more walks than strikeouts entering this year. But the power was, that's where the questions were. Like, I think the hit tool has always been there. The approach, you know, solid speed, but like, where did the power get to? And now he's up to eight home runs in 27 games on the season here. And maybe a little bit of a product of where he's at, but I think the power in general has taken a step forward this year. And even if he's just like a 15 home run guy, you can add 20 steals, you know, solid average and a good OBP to that. You know, he's got 399 OBP for his career now, pushing 1,000 plate appearances or 900, excuse me. You know, I think he's still a sneaky good target. It's because he doesn't have that one standout tool, but across the board, he's pretty damn good.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Looking at this profile is pretty interesting. And, you know, I'm curious how high is a fair place to go on him at this point. Like, we've seen the power. He's obviously had the speed. The contact skills are extremely good. There's no questioning his contact skills. I mean, he's currently running an 87.7% contact rate. And that's just elite. Like, I want to pull up like the contact leaders in the major leagues, and I get it. It's a totally different league. Like, I'm talking about professional hitters in major league ball, but still, like, this is a just insane, insane profile that we're looking at when it comes to the plate discipline and the contact skills. So for me, like, if this power breakout is legit, you keep the speed with it. Like, how can you argue against this guy being like a top 20 prospect? Because we've always had the contact skills there. No questioning that. For reference, the highest qualified contact hitter is Luis Arraez. He's at 95.8%, but there would be just seven hitters with a higher contact rate in the majors. And like you said, I acknowledge the difference in high A, major leagues, I got it. But we're talking about like elite of the elite contact type hitters with Luis Arraez and Stephen Kwan and Nico Horner, Bryson Stott, Alex Verdugo, Kybert Ruiz. So like this is the kind of profile we're looking at, and yet he's showing more power than any of these guys. And he also has speed to go with it. Man, I don't know. I need to do a little more digging. But for somebody that just turned 20, I get it's a, I mean, he's in a hitter-friendly environment. So I am curious, like, how many of these were at home versus on the road? I mean, he's obviously hit four in the last 2 days. So those were on the road at Seattle High. I'm not sure who Seattle High is off the top of my head.
I think it's Everett.
Everett sounds right. Yep.
Yeah. I just pulled up his home road splits. He has four home runs on the. His stats are actually pretty. He has a much higher OBP at home than on the road, but in terms of batting average is nearly the same, home versus road. And slug is .547 at home, but still .500 on the road. So yeah, no real big home road splits here.
Yeah, I mean Spokane is certainly a very hitter friendly. I mean you're talking about every minor league stadium in baseball over the last 2 years has ranked 17th for home runs. So you obviously don't want to see that. But the fact that he's doing it on the road and also, at home is encouraging to see. And I know there's some other hitter-friendly parks, like Everett, where he hit those this week, is also pretty hitter-friendly. And, he's the 28th ranked park for home runs. But again, like, I'm not going to put too much stock into that and, like, really put all my focus there. It's more the fact that we are looking at very solid contact skills, emerging power with speed. He's got to lift the ball more. I mean, he's running a 55.3% ground ball rate. So got to see that improve. And if it does, then I think there's a major breakout in here.
Yeah. And I think he's still, like I said, he's still a bit undervalued. So definitely a great target. I have him ranked 24th right now, right in between Andrew Painter, who's still a hard one to rank, and Andy Rodriguez. So I moved him ahead of Norby, ahead of Luis Angel Acuna, who's having actually a pretty good year as well, and he's moving up as well. I have him ahead of Edward Julian now. So he's kind of moved ahead of a lot of middle infield prospects. And, yeah, he's pushing top 20. And, yeah, if guys like, Meade keep struggling, Drew Jones, again, off to a slow start, Jason Dominguez keeps struggling, I think he could get in that top 20 pretty soon. And I think it's legit. I think he's going to be a pretty good all-around player. And yeah, I'm definitely buying. And obviously, he'll have Coors Field, to call home. And he's still a few years away, probably 2025 ETA. I don't think we see him next year, but yeah, I think he's well ahead of Veen right now. Obviously, Veen has the speed to edge, I guess. But in terms of a pure bat, his bat is way ahead of Zach Veen's right now. And I hate to say that. I love Veen and all, but the bat is not even close to Amador. But I'm actually wondering how I rank these three Colorado outfield prospects now, because I've had Veen ahead, obviously, in my rankings. I think most people have, but he's kind of been doing the same thing. He's still running a ton this year, but the bat is still kind of meh right now. And the bat for these two guys have been very good this year. Yankiel Fernandez, 20-year-old from Cuba, was in a low A for a few games, but most of the season has been in high A Spokane. And slashing .304, .333, .563, 10 home runs and 9 doubles. Doesn't run barely ever and doesn't walk a whole lot, so it's a bit of a riskier profile, but the contact skills are definitely there, the power is solid as well. Maybe he turns in, I can see him being like a Michael Brantley, Nick Markakis type of hitter. I think that's where he could end up. And then Jordan Beck, who I think we are both fairly high on in FYPD rankings last year, if I recall correctly. Yeah. He's been absolutely mashing so far this year. In 32 games for Spokane, .318, .396, .675. It's a lot of power there. Again, another guy that doesn't run a whole lot, but solid bat, big power, nine doubles, 12 home runs already. So I guess let's throw Veen in here, even though he hasn't really done much lately. But how would you rank these three? Like, if you had to, rank Veen, Fernandez, and Beck moving forward, who would you take?
Let me ask you this. Do you think Zach Veen's still a top 100 prospect?
I mean, dude, that's so hard to answer right now. I think he's still like holding on to back end, but this is, if he doesn't turn it around like now, Like, he's not going to be on top 100 my next update.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's probably fair to say he still should be, but if we're at the end of June and he's still performing like he is, then no, because this is a pretty large stretch of just major, major underperformance. And it's not pretty at all. His contact is not there. And this is a kind of profile that's sold out its power for contact, and yet we're not seeing the results. So, you know, Hartford is obviously not a great park to hit in, but for home runs, it's like pretty close to like league average. So it's actually ranked 47th of 120 minor league parks. So like, we can't just sit here and say like, okay, well, like the ballpark's killing him. He moved up Double A last year and it killed him. He's killing him again this year. The interesting thing is like, we saw Veen put up some EVs in the AFL and in the spring. We're like, all right, it's here, but
right,
hasn't really been the case. It's just, I don't know. I'm just concerned about Zach Veen in general. But where are we at on the other? You mentioned Amador's clearly one here for me. After that, man, I still think it's Veen. Like, if my rankings drop tomorrow, then it's going to be Veen. I'm not sure I'm ready to put Jordan Beck ahead of him, but Beck has made an argument. It's just the fact that there's some contact concerns. Despite the contact concerns, he still performed. The two are running similar contact rates, right around 70%. So not great for either, but at least Beck is putting out power. So we haven't seen that from Zach Veen at all. Now, I'll tell you, I have legit concerns about Yankiel Fernandez because he chases so much. And
yeah,
if you know,
very aggressive. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a very high swing rate, very aggressive type. He chases a ton of pitches out of the zone. And if you know me, then you know, like, that's a big thing that a big red flag for me in the profile. He doesn't walk at all. It's the same reason that I have concerns about Christian Encarnacion Strand, despite the fact he's hit just mashed every level. Fernandez is mashing right now in high A, but he chases way too much for my liking. And he seems to me to be overperforming a bit, like a home run to fly ball. Like, he's running a 26% home run to fly ball, which just isn't really sustainable. He has big power, but I'm just not sure I see it. You know, we'll see. I would say it's, if I'm ranking them right now, it's Amador, big gap. Veen and Beck are close, and then it's probably another tier down that I'm going Fernandez.
Now, another one I forgot, because he hasn't been raking over the last 10 days, but this guy's been overall this season performing very well, and I have him in this range as well. Where do you put Sterling Thompson in this mix?
Yeah, I like Thompson a lot, too. I'm pretty comfortable saying that Thompson would be my second. I would put him ahead of Veen. It's close. I would say I've got Thompson, Veen, and Beck all on a similar tier, but Thompson to me is much more this profile of Amador, just obviously with the high contact skills. Like, don't think as I'm saying a direct comp here, but the contact skills are extremely good with Sterling Thompson. He's shown power. I actually think he is hurt right now. He hasn't played. Look, I remember him getting hurt. He has not played since April 30th. Yeah. So he's been out a while. Yeah. So that's why he's not on the,
right.
the last 10.
Yeah, that'd be a slight hindrance to not playing at all.
I can't remember exactly what the injury was. I got to look now. But he was mashing, and I'm not sure that anything the injury affects him. It's an elbow. I said 4 to 6 weeks. So we could see him back over the next couple of weeks. But with what we saw from Thompson, I think I'm ready to say that I like Sterling Thompson over Zach Veen.
So these are how I have them ranked. I just realized that they're very close to my overall. So Veen I have currently at 79, Sterling Thompson at 81, Yankiel Fernandez at 88, and Jordan Beck at 90. So they're all very close. And I just put out a tweet about who would you rather have out of these four. And I want you to guess what the percentages are right now for Veen, Beck, Fernandez, and Thompson, Chris.
I'd guess Veen is way ahead, but maybe the Amador bias the last couple of days puts him ahead. I don't know.
Well, I didn't put Amador in. It was just Veen, Beck, Fernandez, and Thompson. But yeah, so right now it's only been 92 votes. So I did it like 3 minutes ago. But it's Veen at 67%, and then Beck 8.7%, Fernandez about 18.5%, and Thompson about 5.5%. So I think, I don't know if that means Veen's a good sell right now, the other three are goodbyes. I think definitely the other three are goodbyes. That's, I still think the perceived value of Beck, Fernandez, and Thompson is probably lower than it should be. So, and obviously they're all trending up right now. So goodbyes there. Maybe Veen to sell, and maybe if the perceived value on him is still like top 40, then maybe you could sell. But I still have some faith in Veen. Like, he's shown flashes. I'm still holding on to that, but it's kind of gotten into the situation of, if he doesn't show me something soon at the plate in terms of, you know, outside of just running wild, then he's probably fallen on my top 100 by, you know, whenever my update in June is, because it's not, it's just been kind of same thing as last year. He has not taken that step forward that I hoped he could after seeing him in the AFL and the spring training. I think we all thought that he could take that next step this year. We just haven't seen it yet. All right, over to the pitching side of things. We got three pitchers here, all in the, oh no, two in the ALS, one in the NLS. Jack Leiter, Brian Wu, I had to do that, and Emmett Sheehan. You know, Leiter, you know, I've been very vocal on, you know, Jack Leiter kind of falling down my rankings for a bit now. And that wasn't due to the stuff. Like, everyone knows the stuff is there. Like, he wouldn't have gotten taken second overall a couple of years ago if the stuff wasn't there. But just the walk rate has always been very high, even back to his days at Vanderbilt. I know y'all have heard me say that ad nauseum over the last couple of years. But maybe he's turning it around. Like, the last four starts. So, okay, the fourth start back, his last start in April, he gave up five runs. He only had one walk, right, in that outing. And then the last three so far here in May, six innings, no runs, two walks, seven Ks. Five innings, no one run, but no earned runs, two walks, eight Ks. And then most recently against Amarillo, the Sod Poodles. There's so many good names in that league. He's faced the Sod Poodles, the Wind Surge, the Rock Hounds. Then you get the Travelers. Like, come on, Arkansas, get it together. But last start, I gave up three runs, but still one walk and 10 Ks. Are you ready to, you know, start moving him back up your rankings, Chris? I mean, it's been three starts. Well, four if you could, you know, that start in April where he only had one walk. But I'm not ready to, his fall has stopped, I'll say that. And I think I did move him back up slightly, but I don't know. Where are you at on Leiter? Are you a believer, or you want to see more than the last couple starts?
No, I mean, I think that it depends on what a believer. Like, I've got him like borderline top 100. He's looked much improved. He's tweaked a few things and it's worked. Like, it's really paid off. And he looks more like the vintage Leiter we saw at Vanderbilt. He's always going to be a higher walk rate guy. He's probably going to be someone that runs at 10% walk rates throughout his career. But I certainly think that Jack Leiter is capable of sticking as a starter. And those last three starts have been very, very good. I watched all of them at this point, and I think that he's back. So we'll see. But right now I'm comfortable saying he's borderline top 100.
Yeah, he had fallen down to like, I think, 150 range for me. And now he's back to, I think I put him like 125-ish. Where is he? Oh, where are you at? Okay, let's just make this easy and do a control F here. 132. I don't know why. Oh, there he is right there. I don't know why I didn't see him. But yeah, he had fallen down to, he was 148 in my last update. And I think he actually had fallen in like the 160 or so range before this last few starts. I might move up a little bit more. In terms of Texas guys, would you rather, you still got Owen White over him, or are you back to Leiter over White?
I still got White higher. I really like Owen White.
Me too.
I think he
hasn't really missed that many bats this year, though, for some reason.
It is odd. Like, I was going to mention, like, it's been a kind of an odd year for him. But overall, like, the floor is, he's just a high floor arm. And I think he gets back to being a 25 to 28% strikeout rate guy.
Agreed. Yeah.
Something's just a tick off right now, but he'll get back to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, while we're talking about Texas arms, you know, unfortunately, Kumar Rocker needed to undergo surgery here. He'll be out until middle of next year or so. Another unfortunate blow, because he was starting to show something here in the minor leagues. But the other name in the AL West here, Brian Wu, who obviously, I love saying Brian Wu's name, and he's really impressed. Like, I wrote him up in an article over on FTN. I think it was last week on my Wednesday article, as, you know, just a pitching prospect on the rise. You know, he was a former sixth rounder in 2021, a little over 23 years old right now. But this year has been absolutely dominant for the, you know, the Arkansas Travelers, the boring name Travelers there. Seven starts, 185 ERA, 0.83 whip. That's over 34 innings. And he has struck out 37.7 of the batters he's faced. compared to only a 5.4% walk rate. So obviously showing the really good stuff, not, you know, not walking a lot of guys at all. You know, combination of stuff and command and control here. Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that probably should have been ranked higher previously, but probably just wasn't, because the stuff, the stats last year didn't really stand out at you. You know, still checking a bunch of batters, but had a 4.11 ERA between rookie ball, A ball, low A, and high A. So I think that kind of kept his ranking in check. But the stuff is very good, and I think he's going to be pushing top 100 in my rankings. The one I'm updating now, what do I have him? I have him at, he's at 142 for me right now and climbing higher. Where do you have Wu in your rankings, Chris?
He's like in the 125 range. There's kind of a cluster of arms that I like that I think could keep ascending, but he's certainly pushing top 100 status. I think if this keeps up, then it's for another month and it's impossible to keep him out of the top 100. I think he's going to be in the majors soon. I really do.
I do too.
He's been so good. The arsenal, everything you want to see. I mean, his delivery's consistent. He's got good mechanics. It's just so clean across the board. And with that, man, I like Wu a lot. And I don't know, man. Maybe I'm too low on him, but I would certainly be getting in now while you could, because I'm not sure the hype is actually caught up to how good Brian Wu is.
Oh, I think it absolutely has not. So, yeah, he's a great buy. Now, let's play a little who you got, because I think these three arms are, you know, big risers this year. All three within about 10 spots in my overall. And I feel like they're probably pretty close for you as well. I know you like all three of these arms, so I'm gonna pair them up here. All right. Long term, you got to pick between Brian Wu, Carson Wisenhunt, and Nick Frasso. Who are you taking of that three?
Oof. I think Wisenhunt's clear top 100 guy at this point. He's been so good. Frasso's right around that range where I have, like, he's right around that 125 range. But I also, Frasso's hurt, so I'm going to go with Wu. So Wisenhunt, Wu, Frasso.
Okay. Yeah, right now I have Wisenhunt, Frasso, Wu, but again, they're all like 10, 11 spots apart in my overall. Yeah, definitely, there's definitely a tier right there of arms that are on the rise. Like, I also have Christian Mena in that range as well. Brock Porter's in that range too. You know, he's walking a bunch of guys right now. Let's see who else is in that range. Ty Madden's a little below, but he's getting into that range as well. Joey Cantillo, again, a little bit further down, but yeah, a lot of breakout arms in that range that are all, like, you know, back in top 100 or pushing it for sure. Last name, a guy that's in my top 100 now, and I'm pretty sure is in yours as well, Emmett Sheehan, who has just been lights out this year. And I feel like, again, he's still a good buy too, Chris, because, you know, all the focus has been on the names that are ahead of him, right? Like, two guys we even talked about, you know, previously in Stone and Miller. So they've been kind of been hogging all the spotlight. But this year in 34 innings for, like, Tulsa, he has a 1.85 ERA, 0.82 whip, and has struck out, quick math here, 43% of the batters. You know, a little bit of a higher walk rate, not terribly high, 9.6%, but this guy took out a ton of batters last year, 106 in 68 innings with a 2.91 ERA between high A Great Lakes and double A Tulsa, where he got a couple starts end of the season. So this guy has been missing bats at an incredibly high clip for basically his entire professional career, even in 2021, 34 Ks and just 15 2/3 innings. Like, the dude just misses bats. He did that same thing at Boston College as well. So yeah, he's absolutely top 100 for me right now, and I'm sure he is for you as well.
Yeah, so he's got just a legit arsenal of pitches. His fastball's ticked up pretty significantly, and it was already starting to do that last year, where, you know, he was getting there. And now it's just all there, in my opinion. The fastball's up to 98. The changeup is a 70-grade pitch, arguably. He mixes in a slider. Like, the dude's just got it. And I think that we always see these guys just pop off in the system, in the Dodgers system, that is. And I think this is him. And Sheehan's been a dude in the past, like, but he's really breaking out right now. I wouldn't be surprised if we are looking at him as a top 50 overall prospect this year, like by midseason. Like, I think this stuff's that good. So I love Emmett Sheehan.
He is currently 97 for me, and yet rising every update. It's like another 34 spot jump for him. So I might even bump up even more. I mean, he's getting close to Gavin Stone for me. Like, I still have Stone ahead because Stone's, you know, a bit more advanced, but I think it wouldn't surprise me if Sheehan was the better arm long term. I think there's more upside with Emmett Sheehan than there is Gavin Stone. And that's not a knock against Stone at all. I think Stone would be a pretty solid arm, but I think, you know, if they all reach their, you know, ceiling or close to it, I think we're looking at Miller, then Sheehan, and then Gavin Stone. But it's an endless supply of talented arms for obviously Nick Frasso as well. It's just so many good arms in that Oregon, many of them on the rise this year. But that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms for more work from both of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.